It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
World health officials labeled the recent Ebola outbreak the most challenging ever. 4 homosexuals sentenced to prison in Egypt. I'm Victor Beatty, reporting from Washington. The World Health Organization has called the ongoing Ebola outbreak in West Africa one of the most challenging it's ever faced. Assistant Director General K.G. Fukuda said it could take 4 more months to contain the outbreak, which has resulted so far in more than 110 fatalities. Guinea remains the center of the outbreak, with nearly 160 suspected or confirmed cases. Another 21 cases reported in Liberia. The outbreak began in Guinea's forested southeast in February before spreading across the border into Liberia. Health officials are also investigating possible cases in Mali and Sierra Leone. Ghanaian authorities have stepped up surveillance, even though the blood test of a young girl who died last week of viral fever came back negative for Ebola. Dr. Badu Sokoti is with the Ghanaian Health Service.
We are equally worried as any of the neighboring countries of Guinea, because all the risk factors that are prevalent in Guinea, which has led to this outbreak in Guinea, are also here with us in Ghana. We have the bats here, the African fruit-eating bats. It's not very common, but then there are some areas that these bats have been identified in country. We have the primates, the gorilla, the chimpanzees, the monkeys. All these animals are here.
Senegalese authorities are saying they're prepared for any spread of the often fatal illness. They've stepped up surveillance of people coming into the country. They've inspected ships and set up isolation units for suspected cases, shut down markets, and closed the border with Guinea on March 30th. In Egypt, the Associated Press reports telephone and internet links to the southern province Aswan were briefly cut as authorities moved in to put an end to a violent tribal feud between an Arab clan and Nubian family that left at least 26 dead. Meanwhile, clashes between students and security forces erupted once again in Cairo. This time, the confrontation erupted between student supporters of ousted Islamist President Mohamed Morsi and police that occurred Tuesday outside the Al-Azhar University campus. Almost daily demonstrations have taken place since Mr. Morsi's ouster in July. Thousands are believed to have been jailed. An Egyptian court Tuesday sentenced 4 homosexuals to prison. Edward Uranian has that story.
3 of the men were given 8 years in prison, while a 4th received a 3-year sentence, according to Egypt's Ahram Online. Human rights groups, both in and outside of Egypt, condemned the verdict, but VOA was unable to get local groups to talk about the subject on the record. Homosexuality is treated as a crime in more than 30 countries on the African continent. A well-known Egyptian sociologist who asked that his name not be used tells VOA that homosexuality is not frequently prosecuted in Egypt, and the police are usually busy with more serious issues. But he said when a case is brought to their attention, they are often forced to take it to court. The court rulings against the 4 men are subject to appeal and could eventually be reduced or thrown out by another court.
Edward Uranian reporting from Cairo. French Prime Minister Manuel Valls described as disgraceful accusation by Rwandan officials that France was complicit in the 1994 Rwandan genocide. France withdrew from participation in observances Monday in Kigali over renewed charges of France's direct role in the mass killing of some 800,000 moderate Hutus and Tutsis. Meanwhile, Belgian officials and relatives traveled to Kigali to honor 10 UN peacekeepers and 12 Belgian civilians killed in the early days of the genocide. Didier Reynders is the Belgian deputy prime minister.
The Rwanda we see today has nothing to do with the Rwanda of 1994. Leaving aside all hurdles, I can say that Belgium intends to remain at the side of Rwanda in building a society of tolerance, peace, reconciliation, prosperity, and democracy.
The Belgian UN peacekeepers gunned down as they try to secure the country's prime minister. The medical group Doctors Without Borders on Tuesday urged forces in Democratic Republic of Congo to ensure the safety of staff who were taken hostage by rebels in the country's northeast. 4 of the staff members abducted 9 months ago. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. Many of the stories you've heard can also be found and read by going online to our website, that address, voanews.com.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. AFRICOM official says African intervention forces are doing a better job today preventing massacres before they happen.
The African forces that now are available that participate in these intervention and those type of things have expanded incredibly in the last 20 years.
General David Rodriguez is commander of the U.S. Africa Command. UNICEF says it is establishing basic services in the Central African Republic. Malawi's Electoral Commission will reopen preliminary voter list to the public today, Wednesday. And the United Nations expresses concerns over increasing political tensions in Burundi.
Even the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Ambassador Samantha Power, who was visiting the country today, she also raised the same concern about shrinking of political activity in Burundi and the restriction of freedom of expression.
Patrick Nduwimana is director of Bonesha FM, an independent radio in Bujumbura. A new study says African countries will miss the Millennium Development Goal of sanitation. And Intel leads the way with conflict-free chips in computers. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Twenty years after close to 1 million people were slaughtered in the Rwandan genocide, U.S. military officials are confident that forces better positioned to prevent a repeat of such mass slaughter. But as VOA's Jeff Seldon reports from the Pentagon, Washington is still concerned about security across the Africa continent.
Fears run rampant across much of the Central African Republic, where 2,000 people have been killed in ethnic violence since December, and some African peacekeepers have already pulled out. But U.S. defense officials say that African forces have been able to intervene is a sign things are slowly improving.
The African forces that now are available that participate in these intervention and those type of things have expanded incredibly in the last 20 years. I mean, six nations in Somalia, nine going to 16 in Mali.
And the commander of the U.S. Africa Command, General David Rodriguez, says American forces are also better positioned to respond, with as many as 6,000 troops on the ground, including some at a forward operating base in Djibouti and trainers in Uganda, aiding the effort to track and stop warlord Joseph Kony and his Lord's Resistance Army.
They continue to get weaker every day, and we're going to continue to support the efforts of the African Union Regional Task Force to finish this off.
But deep concerns remain about the growing nexus of extremists, especially in northeastern Mali and southwestern Libya. Rodriguez points to the 2013 attack on a gas facility in En Amenas, Algeria, where three al-Qaeda-linked groups joined forces.
They're also transferring things that are very worrisome, like the IED technology and tactics, techniques, and procedures.
In addition, U.S. defense officials say they and their African partners worry about the flow of extremist fighters to Syria and their eventual return across sometimes porous borders. But even as U.S. forces draw down from Afghanistan, Deputy Assistant Defense Secretary for African Affairs Amanda Dory says don't expect a heavier U.S. presence in Africa.
Our small footprint and targeted support, working with willing partners, fulfills both our own strategic approach and is the way our African partners prefer to work with us.
However, U.S. officials do say they are considering ways to improve military capabilities, especially in West Africa. Jeff Seldon, VOA News, The Pentagon.
A top official of the UN Children's Fund says stronger peacekeeping and humanitarian efforts are needed in Central African Republic. The country has been rocked by intercommunal violence since December, pitting Muslim and Christian armed groups against each other. VOA's Jody Kapua reports.
UNICEF's Director of Emergency Operations, Ted Chabin, says children's lives are at constant risk in CAR.
Virtually no children are still attending school. Children have witnessed violence. They've been subject to violence. We have evidence that all of the parties involved in the conflict are recruiting children as child soldiers. And there truly is a psychological impact on these children.
Chabin recently returned to the U.S. from CAR after visiting the capital, Bangui, as well as rural areas of the country.
It's basically a country where, for all intents and purposes, government has ceased to function. There is a government of technocrats trying to do its best, but government institutions at local and district level are no longer functioning the way they should.
There have been two interim governments since President Francois Bozize was ousted by Seleka rebels, including one headed by former Seleka leader Michel Djedodia. The current government is headed by Catherine Samba Panza. She's admitted the government's inability to get much done.
Salaries are no longer being paid. The economy is at a standstill, and the situation is extremely tense.
In December, mostly Christian anti-Balaka groups began revenge attacks against ex-Seleka rebels, who had been targeting their communities. Civilians have borne the worst of the violence. Chabon says UNICEF and its partners are trying to restart basic services, such as education, health, and water. He says one major objective is to protect kids from preventable diseases.
Vaccinating them against measles and polio, we've been able to reach over 500,000 children last year, 150,000 children this year. So that sense that services are back again, play activities through child-friendly spaces.
Chabon has some recommendations to end the violence and rebuild CAR.
Firstly, there needs to be a more robust mission on the ground. The Security Council is looking at a UN mission, both a political and a peacekeeping mission, with the ability and the resources we hope to be able to work on a number of fronts.
He says the second step is an acceleration of humanitarian activities. However, the UNICEF official says a lot more resources are needed to do that. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The UN Security Council on Tuesday expressed concern over ongoing tensions in Burundi, particularly violent activities attributed to the youth wings of political parties as that country prepares for 2015 elections. Also, the United States Tuesday urged Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza to drop planned constitutional changes that could allow him to run for a third term under a new constitution, thereby upsetting a delicate power balance between the majority Hutu and minority Tutsi ethnic groups. Patrick Nduwimana is director of Bonesha FM, an independent radio station in Burundi. He tells me opposition parties and civil society groups are also pointing fingers at the ruling CNDD-FDD party.
We have a report here and there, especially in the countryside, where we have regular violence which are committed by youth affiliated to the ruling party. They are doing this against members of opposition parties. Sometimes these young members of the ruling party, they are just behaving as they are controlling security, and they do not want other political parties, especially those from opposition, just to going on the field meet their members. And apart from that, since a certain time, there is also tension and a kind of political dispute regarding the government's plans to reform or to change the constitution.
You said there's a lack of political tolerance. Who is causing the intolerance?
What we are seeing on the ground is that whenever opposition parties want to go for rallies or assembly, they face a kind of blockade either by government officials, either by the police, or either by these young members of the ruling party. So there are complaints from opposition parties that they are not free to go around, have a meeting with their members. Not only political parties, even civil society associations, they are also facing such kind of problem. Even today, they were planning to have a peaceful demonstration this Wednesday just to claim justice for victims of violence. But the government has said that these civil society activists, they are not allowed to conduct such demonstration this Wednesday. Even the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Ambassador Samantha Power, who was visiting the country today, she also raised the same concern about shrinking of political activity in Burundi and the restriction of freedom of expression.
We learned several weeks ago that three or Tutsi government ministers resigned from the Hutu-dominated government. To what degree is this contributing to the tension?
This tension was related to to the government plan to review the constitution, and the proposition amendments proposed by the government has raised fears among the Tutsi-led party IPRONA. And before that, there was a deputy president who was fired by the president. Then three ministers from the same political party have resigned. But the government has decided to work with another split of the Tutsi-led party. I mean, everything is linked with the 2015 election. We can understand that the ruling party wants to win by all means to stay on power. Opposition party also want to go to election and of course, win the elections. Now, in the minds of most people here, 2015 election is causing political tension now.
Patrick Undwimana is director of Bonesha FM, an independent radio station in Burundi. He was speaking with me from Bujumbura. It's Wednesday morning, April 9th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Malawi's Electoral Commission plans to reopen a preliminary voters list to the public today, Wednesday, so that will allow prospective voters to verify their information. The voters list will be used for the presidential, legislative, and local elections scheduled for May 20th this year. Spokesman Sengwani Mwafulewa tells reporter Peter Clotty that the Electoral Commission is confident that it will produce a credible voters list to be used for the election.
I'm going to think that on Wednesday, 9th of April, we are reopening the centers for voter verification exercise. This is an exercise which we had suspended on the 26th of March, just a day after we had opened the centers for people to go and verify their details. There are some inconsistencies or challenges that were encountered with the voters' roll, so the Commission thought it wise to suspend the exercise and work on the challenges. We did an analysis, and the problem we had emanated from extraction of the information from the database. So we have worked on that problem and instituted double quality checks on the voters' roll that is coming out. So far, the product that we have in hand and that will be distributing to the public is giving us high confidence levels that it is of quality and acceptable levels.
How long will this period of reopening of the register for name and information verification last for prospective Malawians to check their information?
We are opening this verification in phases. So what is starting on Wednesday is the first phase. It's going to run from the 9th up to the 13th, which is a Sunday. Then we're going to come again and announce the second phase and the district which will be covered in the second phase.
How long will it take to present a final voter list that will be used for the election? And do you have the time to meet the deadline because the election is on May 20th?
I cannot indicate how much time it will take us to rectify or even update the voters' roll after the verification period, because that will be determined by the issues that may be noted during the voter verification exercise. If there are many, then that means we need more time. But if there are not too many, then that means we may not need more the time.
There is a political group and some Malawians who are saying that because of these issues, the elections should be postponed till all these issues are resolved before that. What is the stance of the Malawi Electoral Commission?
We are not postponing the elections. The issue at the hand of the voters' roll is manageable, and we have managed it, that we can say. What people should know is that there are several activities to do with elections which are not dependent on the voters' roll, and those ones are proceeding. The only subsequent activity that was supposed to come after voter verification is the printing of the voters' roll itself.
Sangwani Mwafulewa is the spokesman for Malawi's Electoral Commission. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Blantyre. A new study by the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine says no African country will meet the UN Millennium Development Goal for sanitation and that many are lagging behind achieving the target for clean drinking water as well. VOA's Jessica Burma reports.
According to a joint report by the World Health Organization and UNICEF last year, more than 2 billion people, or one-third of the world's population, will remain without access to improved sanitation by 2015. The Millennium Goal calls for cutting in half the number of people who lacked clean toileting facilities in 1990. A study led by British researchers found that none of the countries in sub-Saharan Africa was on track to meet the sanitation goal by next year. Last year's WHO-UNICEF report noted that the world has met the target of cutting in half the proportion of people without access to improved sources of water 5 years ahead of schedule. But that assessment is deceptive, according to Matthew Freeman of Emory University's Rollins School of Public Health in Atlanta. Freeman is co-author of the report by the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. He says it appears the global goal of increased access to clean drinking water is largely being met by emerging countries in Asia, which is obscuring the real picture of the availability of adequate water supplies elsewhere.
China and India, their rapid urbanization and infrastructure investments have led to dramatic changes in access to improved water supply. So globally, that target was met, but few countries in sub-Saharan Africa have met those targets.
Those few include Gambia, Congo, Gabon, Malawi, Uganda, Burkina Faso, Guinea-Bissau, and Swaziland. Many African nations that appear to be on target for reaching Millennium Goals, Freeman says, are not taking into account the situation in their poorest, remotest districts. Investigators say the availability of clean water is highly variable, ranging from 3.2% in some districts of Somalia, for example, to as high is 99% in Namibia's urban centers. Adequate sanitation facilities are equally inconsistent. In poorer rural areas, the researchers found, households were 2 to 18 times less likely to have access to improved sanitation and 2 to 80 times more likely to defecate in open areas compared to more modern rural areas. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
The manufacture of more electronic components such as computers and smartphones requires rare minerals found in some of the world's worst conflict areas. Earlier this year, a major U.S. computer chip maker, Intel Corporation, announced that it has stopped buying minerals from conflict zones and that its products are now conflict-free. VOA's George Putish reports.
Gold, tantalum, tin, and tungsten are often called conflict minerals because they come from the regions plagued by some of the world's worst violence. One of them is Democratic Republic of the Congo, where the commodity's high value is fueling fighting over the mineral-rich areas. Intel's conflict-free program manager, Caroline Duran, speaking via Skype, says it took several years to carefully build a new infrastructure to avoid inadvertently supporting the conflicts.
We know where those minerals show up in our products. We know which suppliers provide us parts or components that have those in them. So we actually spent the first couple of years, as I said, mapping the supply chain out to get to the smelter.
Duran says Intel required the smelters to show the sourcing of the minerals so the corporation could be sure that they were conflict-free. But simply switching to suppliers from other parts of the world could hurt non-combatants in conflict zones who depend on the jobs in the mines. In order to minimize the effects of the loss of those jobs, Intel is also helping other humanitarian efforts in the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
We do support in-region programs, which helps provide a source of livelihood for those that are legitimate miners in the region. And we are investigating other opportunities to see from a broader corporate social responsibility if there's more that we can do in the region.
But other high-tech manufacturers continue to buy from conflict zones. Duran says she hopes Intel's initiative prompts them to reconsider their sources.
Our hope is that as we become more public on it and demonstrate that this can be done, that the others would do the same thing, that they would look through their supply chains and ensure that they know the source of origin for the minerals and materials they use too.
Although Intel has invested time and resources in this initiative, Duran says consumers will not see any increase in the prices of Intel's chips. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Twenty-five minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Marco Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with table tennis. Hosts Egypt and Tunisia advanced to the last four in the boys and girls contest at the ITTF Africa Junior Table Tennis Championships in Cairo, Egypt on Tuesday. Egypt play Angola as Congo-Brazzaville challenge Tunisia in the boys' semifinals. In the girls' semifinals, Egypt and Tunisia face off as Nigeria tackle Algeria. Turning to athletics, the World Athletics Governing Body, IAAF, launched the Athletics for a Better World initiative in Antalya, Turkey, on Tuesday. The IAAF president, Lamine Diak, told the Antalya media that working in concert with the United Nations, the International Olympic Committee, together with the Peace and Sports Organization, they seek to use the universal appeal of athletics to make a positive social change worldwide. Kenyan former world marathon record holder Tegla Lorupe and Kenyan-born Wilson Kipketer of Denmark are among 12 high-profile Athletics for Better World ambassadors appointed by the IAAF to promote this vision. Meanwhile, the Kenya Police Women's Team set a world record in the 4x1500 meters at the Athletics Kenya Relay Series meet in the capital Nairobi over the weekend. World 800-meter champion Eunice Sum, world indoor 3000-meter silver medalist Helen Onsando Obiri, Anne Karinga, and 16-year-old Margaret Chelimo won their 4x1500-meter race in 17 minutes and 8.17 seconds. The previous mark was set by the University of Tennessee in the United States of America in 2009. The Kenyans hold their final trial on the 26th of April to select their team for the inaugural IAAF World Relays in the Bahamas next month. Finally, the IAAF has ratified the women's world 20-kilometer and half marathon records set by Kenyan Florence Kiplagat at the Barcelona Half Marathon in Spain on the 16th of February. According to the reports from Monaco, the women's 20-kilometer world record now is 1 hour, 1 minute and 56 seconds, while the world half marathon record is 1 hour, 5 minutes and 12 seconds. Both records were previously held by another Kenyan, Mary Keitany. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, April 9th.
I wish to call on Kenyan security agency, just 3,000 suspects. Proper intervention must be carried out. Those found guilty as terrorists, the law of Kenya must take its course against them. We are tired of terrorists in Africa. Our remarks to Patrick Okoro Graff, our blue feminist, our triple in Abia State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The World Health Organization said the ongoing Ebola outbreak in West Africa is one of the most challenging outbreaks of the virus that it has ever faced. WHO Assistant Director General Fukuda says it could take 4 months to contain the outbreak. That's it for this Wednesday, April 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, I'm James Butte in Washington saying have a lovely day, Africa.
You love African music?
Music time in Africa.
Wake, 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 wake.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000 and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.
From Washington, this is VOA's International.